Good morning, everybody. We are going to look at the first part of Parshas Yisro. The Torah tells us in source number 1, this is chapter 18, verse 1, Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Aleph. Vayishma Yisro Chohei Minyan Chosein Moshe Es Kol Asher Asa Elokim LeMoshe UYisro Elamo Ki Yotzi Hashem Es Yisro MiMitzrayim. Now, Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, we call him Yisro, the chieftain of Midian, he was the head of Midian. Different midrashim attribute Yisro to different roles. Heard all that God has done for Moses and for Israel and his people, that the Lord has taken Israel out of Egypt. Okay, the Torah tells us that Yisro heard about all the wonderful things that recently happened to the Jewish people. He's rather inspired. And what does he choose to do? He comes to visit. But he doesn't come by himself. We know that when Yisro comes to Moshe and the Jewish people, he brings Moshe's wife, Tzipporah, and Moshe's two children with him. The Torah tells us in source number 2, Vayikach Yisro chosein Moshe es Tzipporah ish es Moshe achar shilucheha. So Moses' father-in-law Jethro took Tzipporah, Moses' wife, after she had been sent away. What exactly does it mean that she had been sent away? Again, different midrashim and biblical commentaries have different takes on the issue. Probably the simplest one is echoed by Rashi, that when Moshe was going down to Egypt to ultimately orchestrate the redemption, he meets Aaron, and Aaron says, Moses, you're bringing your wife and children with you into the slavery? It's bad enough that we have a whole nation that's already stuck in this slavery, we need to add to the numbers. So Moshe sends his wife and his children back up to Midian, and he now is being reunited with them. So that's probably the simplest meaning of the phrase "achar shilucheha," after he sent her away. Meaning, when he originally went down to Egypt, he sent her back up, and now they are being reunited. The Torah also tells us at this point the names of Moshe's children and the reason why he had selected those names. V'es shnei vaneha asher shem ha'chad Gershom, ki amar ger ha'isi beretz nachriya, and her two sons, one of whom was named Gershom, because he, Moshe, said, I was a stranger in a foreign land. V'shem ha'echad Eliezer, ki lokei avi be'ezri, v'yatzilini mi'charev paro. And one was named Eliezer, because Moses said, the God of my father came to my aid and rescued me from Paro's sword. Okay, so now we have a lot of biological information about Moshe's family. We have the family tree here. We've got Moshe, his wife Tzipporah, his two children, Gershom and Eliezer, and the reason why their names were given. I'd like to focus on this portion for a little while. Yes, Alan.
Does this mean that Eliezer was born after Yetzias Mitzrayim?
Eliezer, so the commentaries tell us that Eliezer was born right around the time when Moshe was sent to Mitzrayim to begin the redemption process.
But it says here that he rescued
me. Ah, so we're going to come back to that. Very good. Let's first focus on the language that the Torah uses. It's pretty subtle, but the Netziv picks up on it. In source number 2, the Netziv is commenting on the interesting possessive language that the Torah uses. Let's look back for a moment to Pasuk Gimel. V'es shnei vaneha. And her two children. Her two children. Now, what that means, they're her children and not his children. That's not the case. Moshe is the father. Yet the Torah clearly connects Gershom and Eliezer to who? To the mama. That shnei vanel, her two children, she brings with him. So the Netziv wants to know, why doesn't the Torah say that shnei vanav, his two children, or their children? Why does the Torah speak in the female possessive, her children? They lived with her, very good. Let's also remember, who's the one that's bringing the children right now? It's Yisro, so he's the maternal grandfather. So he feels like it's her children. So that's true. The Netziv says something very astute in source number 2. Perish hamikra baneha. The Torah tells us that they're her children, v'lo kisiv banav. It does not say that they are his children. L'lamed shebaneha heim hamikhashrim osa lemoshe Gam Achar Shilucheha. What was essentially connecting Moshe to his wife after he sent her back? It was the connection to the children. Ba'ashir hi gadala osam. She's the one that raised them. So I think there's a lot you could do with this nitziv. It could just be practically, like you said, Alan, that she's the one that's been raising them, that has been caring for all of their needs since Moshe's been absent to dealing with the Jewish people. I think, though, the nitziv is saying something even deeper. Let's look back one more time. L'lamed shebaneha heim hamekashrim osa l'moshe. That it's the children that are connecting her to Moshe. Beverly, what do you think that's telling us?
Even when parents aren't getting along, the children connect them.
Exactly.
In a divorce that good. Might not be that great.
Exactly. I think the Nitziv is telling us that this marriage was already strained. Not exactly sure why, but this marriage was already strained. And when Yisro brings the family back, he's very aware that Moshe's readiness to accept his family is really built on the kid connection, not necessarily the relationship between Moshe and Tzipora. How do I know that the relationship was strained? Well, we know later on in the Torah tells us that Moshe divorces on some level Tzipora. That's why Miriam, right, ultimately speaks Lashon Hara about Moshe, and she says, well, why did Moshe divorce his wife? We're able to stay with our spouses, and God talks to us too. I think that that's the passage at the end of Parshas Bahaloska. So, for one reason or another, we know that the marriage was strained. It's not unreasonable to expect that when a leader such as Moshe's stature is so burdened with caring for the people, that sometimes that comes at great personal sacrifice. So all I'm trying to tell you is that I think that it says, alluding to that idea right over here, that Yisro understood already that there is some strain on the marriage, and that Shnei Baneha, he's bringing the children in order to connect Moshe back with Tzipora. Yes?
But then it raises a question about the earlier parents where Aaron said, why are you bringing your children into slavery? Maybe Moshe wanted to send Tzipora out. This was the beginning of the breakup of their marriage.
Right.
It wasn't Aaron telling him to send.
So it could be. You know, I'm always hesitant to assume that there have been rocky relationships in the Torah, unless the Torah tells us otherwise. So it could be that Moshe was happy to send back Tzipora when he was going down to Mitzrayim, and he didn't really need Aaron's urging anyways. But the Torah doesn't really tell us one way or the other. All we know is the Torah tells us over here, Tzipora is being reunited, achar shilucheha. So there was a point in their marriage when there was a separation. Now they're reunited. And then Siv is highlighting, yeah, but that reunification is really built upon the fact that she is the mother of his children, and that Beverly, as you reflected, it's not uncommon that in strained marriages, the children are the ones that keep the families together. Rav Hirsch has another interesting idea. He also is looking more broadly, not necessarily at the specifics of the names, but he is telling us what are we able to glean from the general themes of the names of Moshe's children. So let me show you what I mean. Source number 3, Rav Hirsch writes as follows. Hakasav chozer umazkir et shemo shel Gershom umosev et shem haben hasheni Eliezer. The Torah goes back and tells us the names of Gershom, the names of Eliezer. Nira shedavar zeh balu lamdenu. The Torah is coming to teach us ki meirosh, from the very outset, lo heli Moshe me'enei chosno es iburo ves yichuso el ha'am ha'meshuba mimitzrayim. Moshe was a very transparent individual. And from the very beginning, from the names that he chose for his children, he let his father-in-law know that he feels connected back to his brethren in Egypt. And that ultimately, in one capacity or another, he's going to be serving the Jewish people. That's really what Rav Hirsch is telling us. That the names of Moshe's children are listed, but also the significance of their names, which ties back to Mitzrayim, ties back to his people. We'll talk a little bit more about this in the coming commentaries. But Rav Hirsch's idea, sort of flying at 36,000 feet, he's saying just look at the general names. Moshe is clearly communicating with his father-in-law, being transparent, and saying, I am connected back to the story of the Jewish people, which is playing out in Egypt. So it shouldn't come as a surprise that ultimately Moshe goes back to Mitzrayim, reunites with his people, and he has the zechus of also being the one to bring about the geula as directed by the Almighty. So I thought that was an interesting idea, and that's why Rav Hirsch concludes in source number 3, line number 3, Shmos Habanim Migalim Es Iburo V'es Yachaso. The names of the children reflect that connection between Moshe and the Jewish people. Therefore, Yisro, no surprises. Yisro is not surprised. He's now traveling to the desert to be reunited with his son-in-law and the Jewish people. Yisro had an inkling that that was going to happen all along. Good. The Malbim also, in source number 4, is giving us information why the Torah shares with us the meaning of Moshe's children's names. It didn't have to do that in this context. It could have just told us that Yisro comes and he brings back Tzipporah, Gershom, and Eliezer. That's it. Why does the Torah need to insert the names, but the reason for the names? So the Malbim takes it in a little bit of a different direction. While Rav Hirsch focuses our attention on the fact that Moshe was transparent, Moshe wanted his father-in-law to know that he felt connected, and, you know, don't be surprised if I choose to go back to Mitzrayim, the Malbim says that the reasoning for the names reflects Moshe's commitment to his children. In what sense? So the Malbim suggests that when a person names his children after occurrences and incidences in a person's life, that reflects the connection that a father feels to his child. An interesting perspective. Let me share with you what the Malbim writes in source number 4. That Shnei Baneh Asher Shem Ha'chad Gershom Rotze Lomar V'zeh Ha'os She'ohev Es Banav. This is the proof that Moshe loved his children. Kihem Tziyano B'shmosam Es Kol Korosav. Because embedded in their names is a reference to what happened in Moshe's life. Sheshem Gershom Kara Mipnei Ki Amar Ger Hayisi. The name Gershom reflects the fact that Moshe was a foreigner. Ki Bilidato Haya Mischabe Mipnei Paro. When Gershom was born, Moshe was still hiding from Paro. V'hagam Shegam Be'aretz Mitzrayim Hayu Ger Kechol Echav. The truth is, even if he had been in Mitzrayim, he would still been a foreigner. Right? You get the sense that Moshe calls himself a foreigner because he's a Midian. But even if he would be Mitzrayim, he'd be a foreigner. That's also foreign land. Okay, aval atahu ger be'eretz nachriya. But now, if he's a Midyan, he's like a foreigner in a foreign land. It's like a double whammy. Shezeg garua min hager be'eretz moladato. That's better than being a foreigner in a land in which you were born. Think about our lives in America. We're foreigners, but it's a comfortable foreign land because we were born here. If we would travel to a different country, so we have Tarti L'Reyusa, two things going against us. We're exiles from Israel, and we're also not even in the land that we can call our birthplace. So that's the name Gershom according to the Malbim. What I just thought was very interesting is the way the Malbim understands that when a parent calls a child after something that happened in the parent's life, it's reflective of the deep connection that a parent has with the child. Interesting. We don't name children so much that way, but that's the way that the Malbim understands Moshe's naming scheme for his children. By the way, we see that somewhere else in Sefer Bereishis. There's someone who names their child explicitly in the Torah based on incidents in his life. So Yosef, think about the name Menashe and Ephraim. It both reflects things that happened to Yosef in his life. God has allowed me to forget my father's home. God has allowed me to multiply in a land that is not my own. So that seems to be a common occurrence biblically that people name their children based on what happened to them. Very nice. Now I'd like to zero in a little bit more on the names, in particular Gershom. So as I said before, Rav Hirsch speaks generally, oh yes, the names are connected back to Egypt. That's Moshe being transparent. But now let's zero in on the name Gershom. And I think there's a beautiful Meshech Chachma that I came across while I was preparing this lecture. The Meshech Chachma in source number 4 says something so beautiful. Ger Hayisi Be'aretz Nachriya. Remember, Moshe names his son Gershom. Excuse me. Reflecting the fact that he is a foreigner in a foreign land. So what exactly does that mean? Writes the Meshech Chachma as follows, source 5. Misaper ma'alos Moshe, echaya kashur el ahavas amo. The Torah is telling us the praiseworthiness of Moshe, that he felt so connected to his people, right? The word kesher, what's kesher? Kesher is close, it's a connection, it's a knot. When you're all knotted up, you're close, you're proximity-wise. So, says the Meshech Chacham, Moshe felt very, very strong connections to his people. Asher im ki lo hikir osam, ki niskadel bebeis paro. It's true, he didn't really know them, because he grew up in Paro's home. V'haya chasan chosen yisro kohen minyan. He was also the son-in-law of a very important person in Midian. So if you would stop there, just look at those two facts, you would imagine that most people would feel very disconnected from their brethren who are enslaved. Moshe grew up literally in the palace. So he grew up in the lap of luxury. He had, I'm sure, many people that were feeding him grapes as he was leaning back in his armchair, right, flying first class. Then he gets to Midian and he marries into a very prestigious family. Again, the Midrashim say that Yisro actually was someone that was excommunicated and was banished from society, and he was not held in high regard because he rejected polytheism and things along those lines, which is why his daughters had to be the one going to the well. If he's such an important man, he would send his daughters to the well. So it must be that Yisro was not so rich and held in high regard. He was dismissed. Okay, well, you know, we could go back and forth in terms of interpretations, but we do know that Torah gives us the title Kohen Minyan. So Moshe is growing up in the house of Paro, and then he marries into the chieftain of Midian. Let's assume that that remained in part of Yisro's, you know, portfolio. So he was very rich and he was very honored. So Moshe was somebody that really lived a life of luxury, of privilege. And you could imagine that somebody growing up with so much privilege would feel very disconnected from his brethren. I think that's very reasonable. Like Yosef, that's an interesting question. Did Yosef feel really disconnected from his brethren? I'm not sure. That's an interesting question. But what I do know is that all of the cards were stacked against Moshe, in a sense that it was very likely that he would not have a feeling of connection with Am Yisrael. And that's why the Meshech Chachma writes, V'imo mishukaim batit v'chomer, his nation were subjugated, they were swallowed up by bricks and mortar, they were so busy, they were the Nebuch slaves. You see, the chasm between Moshe and the people was extremely large. B'chol zos, nonetheless, I have the words bolded over here, B'chozos hayanechshav be'enei atzmo leger be'aretz nochria. Nonetheless, Moshe considered himself to be a foreigner in a strange land. He names his son Gershom because even though he's living in the lap of luxury, he's got so much privilege right now in his life, he feels like he is in slavery. That's how strongly he identifies with his brothers. That's what the Torah is telling us. Ki ger hayisi be'eretz nochriya. Ger? You're living in the chief of Midian's home. You're a ger? The answer is yeah. Moshe so strongly identified with his people that even though he was living in such opulence, he still felt like a foreigner.
Well, do we know if Paro treated him as a ger?
From the text itself, we know very little. From the text itself, we know that Moshe was raised in Paro's home. So there are midrashim that tell us otherwise, that Paro, you know, gave Moshe that choice between the gold and the coal, and the Malach came and switched his hand. Okay, but those are midrashim. From the simple reading of the text, there's no reason to assume that Moshe did not grow up with anything lacking. He grew up in the palace. So that's the Meshech Chachma, the beautiful Meshech Chachma. V'hayachoshe ves eretz Mitzrayim asher sham imo. And Moshe felt that Mitzrayim was his land. So it's interesting. The Malbim acknowledge that Mitzrayim was not really the land of the Jews. The Meshech Chachma doesn't say it. The Meshech Chachma says that Moshe, when he said, I am a foreigner in the land, he was speaking about what? He was speaking about his experiences, that I am away from Mitzrayim. He felt like Mitzrayim was his land, which, by the way, makes sense. He had never been to Israel. The people were enslaved. This was the land that he knew. And he identified so strongly with the plight of his brethren that he felt like he was exiled.
Well, it was in his DNA. You can't run away from your DNA.
That's right. That's true. Vitzaro al zeh hayagadol, and the pain that he had over this matter was so great, ad ki lo hirgish behatzalaso. He did not feel that he personally was saved. V'lo kara oso al shem she'ezro v'itzilo mecharev paro. And he doesn't even call his first son a name that reflects his own personal salvation. If you take the approach that the name Eliezer is because God saved Moshe from Paro's sword, something that Rashi says, so why wouldn't that come first? You don't think that Moshe would have this tremendous amount of gratitude to Hashem that would indicate that he would name his first child over that salvation? And the answer that you get is no. Moshe's first identity was tied up with the Jewish people. So that's why the first son is named Gershom. I'm connected back to my people. I'm an exile. And the second name refers to the personal salvation that Moshe had at the hand of Paro. There are other ways of interpreting the name Eliezer. We're going to come back to that in just a moment. But I thought that this was just really a striking insight of the Meshech Chachma. We read through this text so quickly. We know, Moshe's son was Gershom. But to think about the statement that he was making is quite profound. Okay, so now we have another issue that we have to tackle. You read the Psukim again. So quickly, you just don't register, but there's something that's off in Pasuk Dalet. Let's look back. Pasuk Gimel is the name of Gershom, and the Etshnei Vaneha, I'm just looking back to Pasuk Gimel for a moment, the Etshnei Vaneha, Yitzro brought Tzipor's two children, Asher Shem Achad Gershom, the first one is Gershom, Ki Amar Ger Yisibar Tznachriya, that Shem, I'm sorry, the word V'es doesn't appear that. The word V'es does not appear in the Pasuk. V'shem, what should have been the next word? Remember, Asher Shem HaAchad Gershom, the first one is called Gershom, so what should it be the opening clause? V'shem HaSheni Eliezer? The second one, we've got first, and we've got second. So first is Gershom. The next pasuk should have, one second. The next pasuk should have read that shame v'shem ha'sheni Eliezer. It doesn't say that. It says v'shem ha'echad, the name of the other one.
Well, we don't know from these pasukim who was born first, do we?
I think we do. V'shem ha'echad Gershom. The older one is known as Gershom.
V'shem ha'echad.
Yeah. No. It means the oldest.
He was the first.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah. Either way, even if he's not the oldest, which he is, but even if he's not the oldest, when you count first, second.
Right.
Even if you're not going in age order, you still count. You don't count 1, 1, 1, 1, 1.
Right.
The Torah is very strange. V'shem, it should be V'shem HaSheni Eliezer. But instead says V'shem HaEchad Eliezer, the name of the other. And one was named Eliezer. It's strange. Fair? Fair question?
But he was
Beverly, you're not so taken by the question?
No, but one and the other.
Then it should
it's
be
not like a whole group of them, just two.
I think you're right.
Or in English, sometimes they say they have two sons.
Right.
One is John and one is Joseph.
Okay.
You don't necessarily have to say.
I understand what you're saying. The commentaries, I think, are bothered because usually the Torah counts. It'll say one and then two and so on and so forth. I think the pasuk should have read V'shem HaSheni Eliezer. If you look back to the psukim by Menashe and Ephraim, I'm pretty sure it says the first one V'shem HaSheni and the name of the second one. Yet here it just says Echad and Echad. So Rabbeinu Bachya in source number 6 writes as follows: V'shem HaEchad Eliezer Haya Ro'i Lomar V'shem HaSheni. The Torah should have said the name of the second one. That's the problem. So, just anyone have a suggestion? What is the Torah coming to highlight when it says Echad?
They don't want to make one son more important.
Very good. So clearly, very good, Beverly. Clearly, the Torah is trying to highlight the individual status of the second son. It's not trying to say that it's that the second son was just the addition, and the next addition of the family was Eliezer. There's something individual. There's something unique about Eliezer that the Torah is trying to highlight. Absolutely the case. Now, what is this individual aspect that they're trying to highlight? That's subject to a great deal of a machlokas, different interpretations. So let me show you what Rabbi Nebach writes. He says in source number 6, line number 1, the adas hapshat, the simple understanding, ze miyucha le'imo, v'ze miyucha le'aviv. Each parent had a favorite child. I don't know if you'd use the word favorite necessarily, like they loved them more, but there was something that resonated with each child, with each parent. Gershom, Shahaya HaBechor, Hayam Yuchal Imo, Gershom was the oldest, so, you know, that was like the apple in his mouth. He was the apple in his mother's eye. V'od, Shehitzilaso Menamisa, Kenyan Shehenemar, Batikach Tziporat Sor. So going back to a very cryptic narrative that's recorded in Parshas Shemos, when Moshe is going down to Mitzrayim, so we know like a serpent comes and swallows up Moshe until Tzipora gives the bris milah to the oldest child, Gershom. Once, without getting into more details, Tzipora saved the life of Moshe and her oldest son. So there was a special infatuation that Tzipora had with Gershom. Does it mean that she loved Gershom more than Eliezer? I don't think that that's the case. As parents, I think we all love our children equally, but differently. So there was a special connection that Tzipora had with Gershom. Ve'Eliezer hayam yucha le'Moshe shekaru kein al-shem hatzalaso. And Moshe had a special relationship with Eliezer. He was called after that incident where Moshe's life was saved. So each one had a special relationship with each child. So that's why the language of the Torah is shem ha'echad ve'et shem ha'echad. Each one was singular in that special relationship with the parents. All right. Let's look at the Malbim. I think this the Malbim's interpretation resonates with me a little bit more. The Malbim writes in source number 7, V'shem ha'echad Eliezer, Hu nolad be'es shetzivo Hashem la'leches al paro. Eliezer was born at the time, and I'm speaking to your point, Eliezer was born at the time when Moshe received the commandment to go to paro. She'az noda she'elohei aviv be'ezro. That's when Moshe understood that the God of his father is going to be saving the Jewish people. V'shelo yira'e mecherev paro. And no longer did Moshe, or quite frankly anybody, need to be afraid of the sword of paro. And that is where the name Eliezer comes from. So you asked me before, right? When was Eliezer born? So based on the naming of Eliezer, you get the sense that Eliezer was born at the time when God was sending Moshe down to save the Jewish people. And according to the Malbim, the name does not focus on Moshe's personal salvation, but rather the general salvation that the Jewish people were now able to enjoy. They didn't have to be afraid of Paro's sword. V'lo amar v'shem ha'sheni, and the Torah doesn't use the name, use the word sheni, v'lo amar v'shem ha'sheni Eliezer, ki beledes Eliezer, because when Eliezer was born, ready for this, samach lo mazel chadash. What does that mean? What's tzamach? What does the word tzamach mean? Tzamach is to grow. Mazel chadash? No, what does that mean? Mazel chadash. At the time when Eliezer was born, Moshe has a new mazel. What does that mean? It means that Moshe got a new job. He got a really big promotion. Up to now, he was a shepherd. Okay, so it's good to be a shepherd. But then he got the ultimate promotion. God tells him, you're going to go save the Jewish people. You're going to be a leader. So that was a moment of rebirth for Moshe. So from that perspective, this is his first son. This is not his second son. That's what the Malbim writes. V'ke'ilu nischadesh lihios ish acher. It's as if Moshe had a renewal, he became a new person, lare lefan of melech visarim. And now he had the courage, he had the fortitude to go down and speak to the king and the officers of Paro, ad shekol echa mehabanim lefi horaso hu nifrad mehasheni. And to the extent that each child was considered completely independent from one another. Each one was separate. So Gershom, and it's very nice if you think about it this way, Gershom was born when the Jewish people were still enslaved. And Moshe saw himself as a sort of a satellite of that slavery. Certainly when you think about the Meshech Chachma, way they would describe, Moshe fully identified with the slavery. So that first name has a negative connotation. And then, but Moshe, just 1 second, I didn't mean to interrupt you. And then Hashem gives Moshe this new mission. Hashem tells Moshe he's going to save the people. Wow. That already introduces a new section, a new time in Moshe's life. And the child that's born in that section is unique to Moshe, unique to a new chapter in his life. And that's why the Torah does not identify Eliezer as the Sheni, but identifies Eliezer as Echad, as the other one. New chapter. Very, very nice. Again, I'm going to repeat myself. We do ourselves a disservice by reading through the verses ever so quickly. I've read these psukim so many times, I've never realized the depth of the psukim. It just takes stopping and opening up a chumash and coming to a parsha shir to realize the tremendous depth that is included. Okay, beautiful. Now what I'd like to do is look at a verse about 7 or so psukim later. We started with Pasuk Aleph, and now we're going to look at Pasuk Ches. And we have to understand the repetition, or the seeming repetition, that the Torah speaks of. So I'm going to draw your attention back to the first page, source number 1, Pasuk Aleph. I'm going to read it one more time. Vayishma Yisro Chowei Minyan Chosei Moshe. So Yisro hears, what does he hear? Es kol asher asa Elokim leMoshe. He hears that all of the things that God did for Moses and the Jewish people, Kiyotzi Hashem es Yomim Mitzrayim, God took the people out of Egypt. Wow! Moshe, Yisro rather, hears this unbelievable news, and he leaves Midian and he goes to the Jewish people in the desert. That by itself is wonderful. The problem is, if you look at Pasuk Ches, we seem to have the same storyline repeated. The Torah tells us, Vayisaper Moshe lechosno. Moshe shares with his father-in-law, Es kol asher asa Hashem lefaro ulemitzrayim alo dos Yisrael. He hears about all the things that God did to Paro and the Egyptians regarding the Jewish people. Es kol atzla'a asher mitzasam baderech v'etzim Hashem. All the occurrences that happened on the way, and God saved them. So isn't that the same thing? Yisro comes and he hears, but why does he come? Because he hears of all the wonderful things that are happening to the Jewish people. He comes, Moshe gives him a big bear hug, and he tells him all the wonderful things that are happening to the Jewish people. Yisro already knows that. It was a big deal when the sea split. Everyone was talking about it. It was the front page of the Midian Times. I mean, of course, there was the Israeli bias, but there was the front news. The whole world heard about it. So in the Az Yashir, Moshe, the Torah speaks of that idea, that everyone heard about what happened, and all of the nations of the world were trembling. So word gets around. So what new information is Moshe sharing with his tati, with his father-in-law?
Very good.
So there are a number of differences that the commentaries pick up on. So let's try ourselves, before delving into the commentaries, to see some of those differences. So who would like to make an observation regarding the difference between what Yisro hears from the general news versus what he hears directly from Moshe? Just compare the psukim. What's the difference?
Moshe was in the first one.
Okay, very good. So in Pasuk Aleph, Yisro hears everything that God did for Moses and Israel, focusing on Moses. And in Pasuk Ches, Moshe tells Yisro about all the things that happened to Paro and to the Egyptians because of Israel. But Moshe doesn't talk about himself. The word Moshe doesn't appear. Very good. What else? Any other differences that you can detect? So look at the name of God that's used. In Pasuk Aleph, the name of God that Yisro hears about is Es Kol Asher Asa Elokim. And when Moshe talks to his father-in-law, Es Kol Asher Asa Hashem, that which God did. Okay, so those are two distinct differences. So let's see. If you look in source number 9, Rashi is absolutely addressing this issue, but he doesn't really delve into the differences to a great degree. Look at what Rashi writes in source number 9. Vayisaper Moshe lechosno. Moshe shares with his father-in-law, Limshoch es libo, the pay is a typo, Limshoch es libo likarvo la Torah. Moshe speaks to his father-in-law in order to draw his father-in-law in order for the father-in-law to be inspired and want to join the Jewish people, likarvo la Torah, to inspire him to join Am Yisrael on their historic journey to receive the Torah into the land of Israel. And the Sifsei Chachamim, one of the super commentaries on Rashi, writes as follows, addressing our point. De'im lo kein, if this wasn't the point of Moshe's story, lama siper lo, why does Moshe have to tell his father-in-law what happened? Hakvar shama hakol. Yisro already knew it all. Kidichsi vayishma Yisro. He's referencing Pasuk Aleph. So the Sifsei Chachamim is telling us, Moshe, well, let me rephrase that. The Sifsei Chacham is telling us what's motivating Rashi to make his commentary. Rashi's commentary that tells us that Moshe shared with Yisro all of the things that happened to draw him into the Torah is essentially acknowledging the fact that there was no new information shared. Nothing new. It's just Moshe felt that he's going to go over the details now in order to draw the people, to draw Yisro in. Make it more significant, maybe more of an emotional tone to the story. But informationally, was anything new included? No. According to Rashi, Rashi's saying, he's drawing him in to get him interested in Torah. And that's what the Sifsei Chacham is saying. Otherwise, what's the point of his sharing? Moshe Yisro already knows. Clearly, according to Rashi and the Sifsei Chachamim, no new information is being shared, nothing at least noteworthy, and the whole point is just to make this emotional plea to Yisro to join the Jewish people and to accept the Torah.
But Yisro was already in the
Torah. No, he's not. He's a Chohen Minyan. He's a...
Yeah, but he came to, you know, he was on his way.
No. We're not fine. Father-in-laws don't always come to stay. They come for a few days and then they go back, right? Okay. All right. Well, someone said a cute joke. It's certainly not applicable to my in-laws. They're so wonderful. But someone said, what do in-laws and fish have in common?
Get stale.
After 3 days, they begin to reek. Okay. So the Nitziv says in source number 3 as follows, a very nice idea. Es kol asher asah Hashem leparo lemitzrayim alo dos Yisrael. That writes in its if Af al gav shekvar shama esa sher asa elkim lemoshe u Yisrael amo. Even though the Torah has already told us that Yisro hears everything that has happened to the Jewish people, mikol makom hodia lo chadashos. Nonetheless, there was something new that Moshe added to the conversation. Masha lo yada. There was new information shared that Yisro up to now did not know. Hainu, asher asa Hashem, that which God did, velo Elokim, not Elokim, shemashma'o koach hadin, v'ha'onesh al ha'negishas. You see, Yisro heard about the name Elokim. Elokim implies din. Din is judgment. God was strict. God was strict because there were terrible atrocities that were committed. And we could bring them to the Hague for all of their crimes against humanity. They had subjugated and enslaved the Jewish people for hundreds of years. So Yisro hears about all of the strict justice that God metes out against the Egyptians. And Moshe tells Yisro there was much more happening than simply, you know, serving the Egyptians their just deserts. God, Shem Hashem, not Elohim, but Hashem, was involved here too. There was a Midas Harachamim, and there was compassion, there was mercy that was also showered upon the Jewish people. If you look at the Netziv in the next paragraph, he explains a little bit further. Ela Odzos Shebemakos Hayatachlios Ladas Koach Hashem. Part of the plan, the purpose of the Makos, was not simply to punish the Egyptians, but it was also for the world, and particularly the Jewish people, to understand the koach of Hashem, to understand the power of God. Kemosha amar Hashem bekama makomos leman teda. Moshe is told many times by God, I'm going to inflict the Egyptians so that they should know about my power. The commotion is Barasham, as explained there. Vahodiya lo od, shehaya leparo ule mitzrayim. This is an unbelievable insight. So let me just review for a moment what the Netziv just said. Netziv says the first difference is that Yisro hears about God as a strict being that's punishing all those who are guilty. Moshe introduces the concept of Hashem, a compassionate, merciful God that wanted people to know about his presence and wanted to connect to the Jewish people. That's the first difference that you can see in terms of the name of God that was used. But then the Netziv says, God, Moshe also wanted Yisro to know about all the things that God did to Paro and Mitzrayim. Isn't that the same thing? Paro and Mitzrayim? Why does it just say Paro? Just say Mitzrayim. Why do you have to have both words? So listen to this unbelievable insight. V'hodiya lo od shahaya leparo ule mitzrayim. Shelo nishtavu ha'onshim atzman leparo ule mitzrayim. That the punishments themselves were not the same to Pharaoh and to the Egyptians. Ela leparo hayu gidolim kidei laharos hatachlis mizeh hamaka. Paro suffered even more. Mashlo haya makom lekavos sheyadu mitzrayim mizeh. Paro suffered more because God understood that Paro has the ability to understand the hand of God and ultimately to communicate that to his people. The Egyptians, so God didn't expect too much from the Egyptians, so they suffer a little bit less. Umikomakom higia kozeh alodos Yisrael. And Moshe also tells his father-in-law that everything that happened surrounded the Jewish people. Veloksiv biglal Yisrael, the Torah doesn't say the words biglal Yisrael, ela be'emes letachlis yitzias Yisrael lo haya hechrich lekach. Because if it was just to get the Jewish people out, we didn't need 10 plagues. Ela b'sibas Yisrael. This happened because of the Jewish people. Nisgalgulu yedios halalu. Because of the Jewish people, we were now able to get the message to Egyptians about the power of God, his role in the universe. All of that happened because of the Jewish people. Again, it was not because the Jewish people had to get out. That God could have done very quickly. Rather, it's in the merit of the Jewish people, God was able to increase the knowledge of God in this world. The od hodiyu es kol hatzla. Additionally, Moshe lets him know about all of the incidences that have happened on the journey. V'zelo shama adayin. That Yisro didn't know also. So new information has happened. Since Yisro got the last paper, whenever that was printed, more information has become known. And Moshe shared that with his father-in-law too. So essentially, according to the Netziv, I would say there are three different points that Moshe added to what Yisro already knew. Number one, the type of God they were dealing with. Is it just a strict God, Elohim? No. There was definitely a Midas Hadin, but there was also Midas Harachamim. That was the Shem Hashem that Moshe speaks of in Pasuk Ches. Number two, Moshe imparted this information to his father-in-law that Paro suffered and Mitzrayim suffered. They suffered differently. What the Netziv doesn't say, but I think it's just rational and intuitive, that Paro is more guilty than the rest of the people. He was a leader, so he suffered more. The way the Netziv spins it is that Paro, or let me say this, that Hashem had higher hopes than Paro, that Paro could understand that the suffering was because of the hand of the Almighty. That level of understanding, a regular Egyptian might not have been able to really understand. So that's why Paro is hit harder, because Hashem expects more of Paro's recognition of the hand of the Almighty. And lastly, all of the new things that have happened since Yisro got his paper. So there was more to tell. So clearly, according to the Tziv, what we read about in Pasuk Aleph and what we read about in Pasuk Ches is markedly different from one another.
You can always get more information. Absolutely. From
there, absolutely.
Then by the time you hear it, second or third hand.
Absolutely. Yes, very good.
I still don't understand why you say that Paro suffered more than the Egyptians. In what way did Paro suffer more than the Egyptians?
You're saying if physically the 10 plagues came, so lice is lice and pestilence is pestilence
Paro
and darkness is darkness.
Many Egyptians did not.
Right. It's an interesting question. We definitely see a lot of the language that the Torah uses in the Makos. It focuses on Paro and his home and his servants and then everybody else. Like, there was an emphasis there. A, it could have started with Paro, so it might have lasted a little bit longer. And B, you know, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. So having to suffer through the plagues and having to lose the Jewish people was a harder hit to Paro than it was to everybody else. Emotionally, it impacted him a lot more. He was a leader, and to be defeated by somebody else, by God, that hurt Paro even more.
Paro suffered politically.
Right. So maybe.
But the Mitzrayim,
Right. It's a fair point. Your point is that if the plagues were generally physical attacks on the Egyptians, so what, Paro's darkness was worse than the Egyptians' darkness? It's a fair point. I'm not 100% sure how I would respond to that. It's an interesting observation. Let's finish off this morning's lecture with the Malbim. The Malbim is also addressing the same idea. The Malbim writes, "Vayisaper Moshe lechosno." Moshe shares with his father-in-law, "Negen mashekasav lemala," corresponding, or really I should say in contrast, to what the Torah tells us above, "Sheyisro shama eis asher ase Elokim leMoshe leYisrael." You see, Yisro is a very proud father-in-law. So when he hears of the information of what happens to Moses and the Jewish people, so Yisro feels like, wow, everything happened because of my son-in-law Moses. Look at the pasuk; it reads very nice. In pasuk Aleph, Vayishma Yisro choy midyon eis chosei Moshe eis kol asher asa Elokim leMoshe leYisroel. Everything happens because of Moses. It's my son-in-law. Oh! What a Yiddish nachas, a minyan nachas, right? Tremendous nachas that Yisro had. Amar lo Moshe, so Moshe had to very politely correct his father-in-law, Shehakol nasa ala dos Yisroel. Let's be honest, Dad. Nothing happened because of me. This is all about Odos Yisroel. That's the language from Pasuches. Moshe tells his father-in-law, I am just the conduit, I'm just the messenger, but ultimately it's not in my zechus. Lo ba'avuro, it's not because of me. V'kamosha kasov, klum nasati l'cha gedula, ela b'shul Yisrael. That's a general idea that we see reflected in Moshe's leadership, that Moshe's greatness is only a function of the Jewish people's greatness. And when the Jewish people fall, Moshe falls. That's why the Torah tells us that as long as the Jewish people were wandering around the desert in those years of the exile, Moshe didn't communicate in the same way with the Almighty. Because if the Jewish people were punished, Moshe is simply an extension of the Jewish people. So it's a nice idea. I think parents oftentimes have nachas in a bloated way. Like they think, oh, my son or my son-in-law, they get all the credit. And oftentimes it's not exactly that, not exactly the case. Okay, let's move on. The next paragraph in source 12. V'nega mashikasav eis asher asa Elokim leMoshe. Corresponding to what Yisro heard, that Elokim did this for Moshe. Sheyisro choshev shatovos nasu ayidei Elokim the kochos ha-moshlim. God was acting again as a ruler, as a strong ruler. Amar le Moshe shakol nasa ayidei havaya ki ein od milvado. I think this alludes to what the Netziv says. There are different attributes of God. Yisro thought it was only through the attribute of Elokus, of Din, of Gevura, but Moshe says, Dad, there was also compassion. There was also mercy there. It wasn't as harsh as you may have heard about. V'nega ma'ase Yisro lo his'orei rak mitzad ha'tov shenasa liYisroel. You see, Yisro was inspired about the good that happens to the Jewish people. Lo mitzad ha'makos shehi kol mitzrayim shechoshev shehem mipoel hara. Yisro is not particularly taken by the plagues because he thinks that that's like evil. That was retribution. That was punishment. Moshe corrects his father-in-law. Siper lo Moshe asher asa Hashem leParo ulMitzrayim. Yisro was told, no, what happens to Paro and to Egyptians, that was also good. Shegam zehaya mipoel hatov. That was actually good. Kize asa al odos Yisrael, because it was all about the Jewish people. Kede lehetiv liYisrael lehaanish es nogshehem ulhotziam lechiras. There was a positive purpose that came out of the plagues as well. So it seems like Yisro heard the story from one perspective, from one narrative. He focused on the good of the Jews and was not taken by all of the terrible things that happened to the Egyptians. And Moshe tries to spin it a little bit differently and says, you should be aware that even what happened at the hands of God to the Egyptians wasn't evil, it had a purpose. There was a good that came out of that too. So that's why if you look at Pasuk Aleph, Yisro doesn't mention Mitzrayim, doesn't mention Paro. And when you look at Pasuk Ches, Moshe loops them in as well. Ularaya alzeh, and then as further proof that everything is about the good of the Jewish people, siper lo es kol hatzla'a asher matzasa maderech. Yisro is also told about all of the wonderful things that God has done for the people on their way in the desert. The man, the well, all of those pieces, Moshe adds to the conversation because it's proof of the pudding that everything is done for the good of the Jewish people. So that which we sort of marginalize as simply evil and punishment for the Egyptians, don't marginalize it as such. You have to integrate it in part of the larger story. It was all for the sake of the Jewish people. It was all a function of God's compassion over Am Yisrael. So the Netziv and the Malbim are both barking up the same tree. They're both saying that Moshe's information and Yisro's information were not exactly the same. The generalities were the same, but Moshe was able to share with his father levels of detail that he did not know and spin the story in a way that Yisro was not otherwise aware. So I hope that you're leaving today's class with a better understanding of the first couple of psukim of this week's Kriya Satorah. This parsha is so rich we could spend the next 6 hours talking about the very first Aliyah, but I guess we have other things to move on to.
Yeshakoa. But in the first class,